that was Lainey Lou and the Bird Dogs playing us in. And this is the Grizz Fan Podcast. I'm Luke.
And I'm Mike.
And I'm Brent.
And you're Brent.
Yes. You just looked at me. I didn't realize I was coming in this fast.
You're on, baby. You're on.
I was like texting the lady that's picking up my dogs to take them to get a bath. Okay.
Lights, camera, action.
All right. I got to be more focused.
Are you powdered?
I'm ready.
You don't need powder for the radio.
We're new at this. I had a whole intro worked out. You want me to work on it still?
Let's hear the intro.
Man. So what happened this week? Every week we have a monumental thing. Last week it was our parents discovering the podcast. So this week we've got our first guest. And he is official Grizzly Athletics verified. You want to know why?
Why?
Because he was mentioned on the Grizzly pregame radio show this week by none other than Scott Guernsey, you know, everybody's favorite pregame radio announcer.
Yeah, if Guernsey is official, Brent is definitely official.
And he said that, essentially, I'm paraphrasing here, Egriz is trash, but Brent Wahlberg is the smartest guy on it. Is that about right?
It was something like 3/4 of the people don't know what they're talking about, but apparently I do. So I consider Scott Guernsey verified just one level below the, you know, blue check mark on Twitter.
So. Yeah, so this is a big deal. And his first media appearance since is the Grizz Fan Podcast.
Right.
Nothing will legitimize this podcast more like the valedictorian of Egriz.
In all honesty, Brent Wahlberg is a great Twitter follow. What's your Twitter handle?
It's just at B. Wahlberg.
At B. Wahlberg. And he does a great scouting report every week, kind of closer to the mid to the end of the week, on Egriz.
Yeah. Pretty big Grizz dork, I guess.
Great stuff. You're in the right place.
Brent, where did you grow up?
I grew up here in Missoula.
So you, that's pretty close to Butte.
Yeah.
You're making the guest be in the live read for the ad? It's a whole new world here.
I wouldn't say it's walking distance, but I mean, it's a short bike ride.
You stay in hotels sometimes.
I sure do.
I was at a meeting today where somebody suggested that Bozeman is basically coming all the way to Butte. And I know that Butte would be offended because the Hotel Finland in Butte is unlike anything that exists in that crappy Bozeman.
I can verify that. That's true. The Hotel Finland, they have this thing called the Smooth Hopperator. Do one of those exist in Bozeman?
Not that I'm aware of.
The only one in the world exists at the Hotel Finland. That's Hotel Finland, FINLEN.com. While you're at the Hotel Finland, you can go to the Cavalier Lounge and enjoy beers and drinks made by the Smooth Hopperator while listening to some of the best music Montana has to offer.
It really is a cool place. I know you're getting sick of us saying this every week, but hey, they're our sponsor and you're listening to our podcast. Great place, center of Butte, America. Really is kind of a fun place to stay in the heart of downtown Butte, which actually has a lot of neat things going for it. Cheap rooms, I believe they start at what, $60 or $80?
$80.
Anyway, check it out. Hotel Finland. That's FINLEN.com. And with that, let's start the show.
So, Grizz game recap.
Yeah, so I think it's great that Brent's here with us to talk about week two. So, obviously, coming off of Northern Iowa in week one, you know, all the emotion, Bobby Houck's back. There were things that we liked and things that we didn't like about that game. Still didn't really know what to expect going into Drake week two. They're from the non-scholarship Pioneer League conference, which is kind of a misnomer, as Houck talked about in his press conference. Pretty much everybody on that team is getting aid. They have finished in the upper half of the conference, and we talked about it last week. San Diego is also in that conference, and they've beat a Big Sky team 2 weeks in a row, or two years in a row in the playoffs, sorry. So they were legitimate. That being said, I think they were picked second or third. The Grizz beat them, final score 48-17, right?
Handily.
Handily. Wasn't handily the whole game, though.
So the Grizz kind of finished week one slowly, for lack of a better phrase. And they started slowly, but they sort of reversed course here. They ended with a bang.
Yeah, so at halftime, the Grizz were winning 17-10, which, I mean, at least they were winning. They never trailed in the game. But still, 17-10. So let's talk about the first half to start. So, Brent, what did you take away from the first half, and what were you thinking at halftime?
Well, I brought my daughter, so I was thinking mostly things that avoided a lot of curse words. But you know, it was interesting thinking about the game. I was talking about it before. This Grizz team is super young, and the Drake team actually had 16 seniors and like 8 fifth-year seniors starting. So. You know, talent level, the Grizz were more talented, obviously, but they were playing a more experienced team. And so I was a little concerned that a younger Grizz team coming off a big win would maybe come in and get caught a little early. And it kind of seemed like they did. I mean, it was kind of a slow start for them. The first half was, I don't know, it seemed like a lot of people in the tailgates were a little nervous about what they saw.
Yeah, that's fair. I think that one big thing that jumped out to me is, and it's going to be the story of the year, is our O-line really struggled in the first half. And one of the things I pointed out that, Britton, you and I have talked about offline quite a bit is that one of the staples of Bobby Howe coach teams is that they get better every week. But Luke is an asshole, and he pointed out this week that what is the alternative, that they're going to get worse? Talking about the O-line.
Yeah.
Well, in the first half.
Well, here's what I think. We come in with the supposition that the Grizz team will get better every week. The Grizz offensive line, maybe even every position will get better. These are young men. Every game is more reps, right? Like no one's peaking in college, or maybe not until like their senior year. So every team's going to get better, was my point, right? Like the defensive line that we play against every week is going to be better than the week they were before. It seems like a constant thing that we're always going to lag behind until...
Proportionally, which makes sense. I will say that relevant to their competition and in general, O-line in first half of the Drake game, worse than O-line in either half of the Northern Iowa game.
Yeah, that was a rough performance. Now, Drake had like two bigger D tackles in the middle, but still, I mean, I don't recall any push. And what do we have? What was our rushing yards at the half? Like 17, 20 yards total?
Something like that.
It wasn't great.
Yeah.
I kind of think maybe the coaches are factoring this in. And of course they are. That's what makes these guys great coaches. But we threw the ball the first five plays that we had. We went four and out.
I noticed that.
Right. We started with the pass. We had a Eastwood run. And then we ripped off six passes. So we had an 11 pass to one run ratio, essentially after our first two possessions. If this offensive line is bad, are we even seeing how bad it is? Because it feels like the Grizz coaching staff is play designing around their weaknesses.
Well, it's something you saw. That's how we finished the Northern Iowa game, too. I mean, to run out the clock, we had to throw three passes to kill the clock. There wasn't even even an attempt or a hope to make that a run play to wind the clock down. It seems like it carried over to this game.
It's interesting.
So then how did the Grizz end up scoring points? Like, how did they end up solving the riddle?
So, well, I guess in the first half, I don't know that they did. I think that in the first half, the fact that they were just naturally a better team talent-wise, and they should beat those guys, is why they were ahead 17-10. Northern Iowa scored on some fluky stuff throughout the game. So, I mean, and if you look at the final stats, I mean, the Grizz defense played really well. But in the first half, nothing amazing. I will say that there were moments where when I was rewatching, I was like, wow, that actually was a great play and a great pass. And Snead hit some good passes and kind of scrambled a little bit. And we'll talk more about Snead in a second. But, I mean, my biggest impressions and my big takeaways were from kind of the second half, if that makes sense. The other thing, and maybe now is the time to talk about it, maybe now is not the time to talk about it, but Snead, stats-wise, looks really good through two games.
Well, it's pretty easy when your longest pass is like 10 yards up the field.
Exactly.
I mean, but that was like the thing that you saw in this game. So you talk about lack of a run game. And of course, Snead, once again, in that first half, had no time. I mean, he's in the shotgun, ball's in his hands, and there's like a guy in his face within, what, seconds? And so you saw it kind of happen rapidly. And I wonder if Rosenbaugh, in their game plan, tested to try to run and found out they couldn't. And so to get the pressure off of Snead, it was spread the offense out. So suddenly, which is kind of funny, you see Hauk and Rosenbaugh running the offense that Bob Stitt ran.
Yeah,
you got four or five guys wide, and you're spreading this defense out because they couldn't, with that many defenders in the box, Snead had no time at all.
None. What's interesting is I rewatched it Sunday morning because I always, when I'm there in person, it's like, you know, your hot takes are one thing, but you can watch it and kind of see that, well, maybe I was wrong on this or that. But Snead started 9 of 10. So everybody's like, oh my God, this is fantastic. How many yards do you think he passed for? 9 of 10?
65 yards.
I'll bet like 40 or 50.
38 yards. So it's, I think that proves the point that for now anyway, the short passes to mostly Jerry Lou McGee, but a few of the other receivers too at the line of scrimmage, you know, like not necessarily a bubble screen, but those verticals out, or not verticals, but flat. that's definitely the running game or part of it. So one of the things Luke and I talked about a little bit was, if you look at Snead's stats and you say, oh, he's completing 65%+ of his passes every game, and it's looking like he's averaging 250 passing and 50 rushing, you'd say, great, if we had about 100 yards of rushing from someone else. But we don't. So that's what I think we need to work on.
Who are some of the offensive standouts of the game?
You know, as the game went on, I mean, Jerry Lou McGee obviously was awesome. He had, 14 catches for 133 yards. Had an awesome touchdown where he kind of got hit with a helmet in the hip, held onto the ball. The one that I really liked, and I know that Brent did too because we talked about it on Twitter, was Sammy Akem. I mean, I felt like that was the game we've been waiting for where it's actually actually put together, like, I need to be physical and go up and fight for these.
Kind of a breakout game.
Yeah, and I was looking at his stats because it was like it was his career-high game. Mm-hmm. And his previous career high was 45 yards. And that surprised me because I've always been waiting for him to break out. But I didn't realize, like, he really has kind of been a tease. And you look at his stats last year, and he only had 207 yards receiving. So that's a big deal if we can get him going opposite Torrey.
Yeah, well, and I mean, the thing that I just love seeing about him, because I think a lot of us can think back to last year, and it was just inconsistency. Like, he had Idaho State, where he made a bunch of big catches, and there was Eastern Washington and other games where it just didn't go too well. And then in this game, there was a diving catch. There was great footwork, too. There was making guys miss. And that touchdown, I mean, catch in the middle and then mm-hmm. getting pretty much a high-low hit from two defenders and hanging on. Around. I mean, that's something we haven't seen from him. So it was something that I was talking about. I think mm-hmm. it shows, you know, the work that Sammy's put in plus the coaching from Coach Pease and Rosenbaugh this year. I mean, it's paying off big time.
What do you guys think the difference was first half, second half then?
So I think in the second half, kind of transitioning out of the first half, in the second half, the last 20 minutes are, in my mind, the best that they've looked all year. The defense has looked pretty good in both games. They still have some things that have, I think, been a hallmark of Grizz football for the last 8 years or more now, where it's like third and long, fourth and long, we just give it up, which is frustrating, and I imagine those will get cleaned up. But what seemed to happen, and it was interesting, was we had some injuries this game. Cody Meyer, the starting center, went down, mm-hmm. some sort of arm thing, so they had to move Eckmeyer from one of the guards to the center. And for one series, it was the backup, whose name I'm blanking on. Brent's probably better than I am at this.
Is it Sermon that came in for one? And then Cole Sane.
But then Cole Sane, yeah. the true freshman, right?
Yeah.
He came in, and I think that the offensive line looked better. And coincidentally, Eastwood finally broke off a big run, and it was on a botched snap.
Yeah. On fourth and one. Yeah. I think the funny thing, you take that away, and like Eastwood had, I think, almost 60-ish yards. Mm-hmm. And that touchdown run was 37.
Yeah.
So, you know, not the greatest stat day, but two touchdowns, though, that's a little better.
Yep, but the thing about the stats is, you know, it does make teams think, well, they, you know, it boosted the average up, so that's good. But I think I texted somebody, it might have been either of you or it might have been someone else, and said, maybe this is a turning point. But it really did feel like from that point on, like the offense kind of was like, oh, yeah, we can go out and, you know, do what we want. Then after that, you know, Snead picked it up. In the first half, I mean, he had a great completion percentage, but and he hit some passes. He had a nice one to Akem in the first half, but he also overthrew some guys. He had Torrey for a touchdown in the end zone that he should have hit. He had Torrey up the sideline that he should have hit, just to name, kind of give two examples. In the second half, he seemed to stay in the pocket for a second longer and actually throw the ball downfield. Like, it was beyond the sticks. It was beyond 10-yard lines. Took a few. Both of his touchdown passes were right down the center of the field in the second quarter. The one to Jerry Lou McGee, and I forget who the other one was to. Akem.
Yeah.
So I thought that was good to see.
Yeah, it was great. And actually, I mean, I can think back to, and Mike, you and I watched a lot of spring and fall camp. It seems like that when Snead gets dialed in and comfortable, Working that center of the field and splitting defenses, it seems to really be his forte. So it was nice to see him kind of get that locked in, because they're going to need that from him.
I would agree. The short and intermediate stuff straight down the center of the field, I think, is his most accurate pass.
Absolutely.
I think he struggles on the out passes, which we saw a little bit, even like some of the dumps to Eastwood and stuff like that. Now's as good a time as any, since Brent brought up practices, to point out that we are not media members. And this will be my once-a-show plug that I am a QB Club member. You should become one too, because it's awesome. But if this show jeopardizes my QB Club access, you're done.
This is the Grizz Fan Podcast.
Fan, not media. Fan. They feel the same way. They just don't want to say it out loud.
Yeah.
A couple things you like about Snead as well is he's not turning the ball over. One bad fumble. But, you know, through two games, I mean, when was the last time in back-to-back games we didn't throw an interception?
Yeah, we have just one turnover loss.
Yeah, it's that fumble. And it was kind of like he kept it on an RPO, it looked like, and then you just lost it.
I thought we were going to see a little more Cam Humphrey this game, but we didn't.
No, it was interesting because one of the things that we talked about a little bit is like, you know, Snead's got to stay in the pocket, but he needs his elusiveness because this O-line and... If he keeps taking hits, like how long can he hold up? So I thought they'd pull him, but I kind of wonder if the coaches felt like we're finally in an offensive rhythm. We need to keep getting reps like this. What do you think about that, Bryn?
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like that. And you saw where Snead, especially in the second half, his scrambling, his run plays, he'd stay in the pocket, but he'd still remain a little bit more elusive. And if it helps kind of get him in the better flow, build a little bit more trust in the O-line and what's going on in front of him in the game. I mean, you got to roll with it. Yeah, so it is something. It'll be interesting to keep watching, because how much can we rely on our quarterback to be our leading rusher in the game?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's got a rushing touchdown at each game now, and you know Bobby Houck has to absolutely hate the fact that quarterback is the leading rusher, because that's not the workhorse that he wants.
Yeah, that's not Bobby Houck. I mean, you know, one thing I do like, and we talk about like, if he's the guy running the offense and we aren't getting a running game, there's got to be stuff to it. And one thing I think he's doing really well is distributing the ball.
Mm.
You know, it's like, I know Kern got dinged up a little bit, but it's like Kern was his kind of early go-to last week, and then Torrey was later on. This week, Jerry Lou McGee and Akem. It's like, we've got such talent wide receiver, he doesn't seem to have a favorite.
Imagine having to scheme for this set of wide receivers. I mean, like, thank you, Bob Stitt, for having 1,000 wide receivers on scholarship. But what do you do? You have to kind of pick your poison.
Yeah. Well, first of all, what do we do is move two of them to cornerback and make them starters.
Yeah. But, I mean, you look at that. Like, our best two corners were receivers in Bob Stitt's offense, yeah. Justin Calhoun and Darian Nash.
Now, was it me, or did we not hear Justin Calhoun's name called a lot last week because they weren't throwing at him?
I mean, the one thing you saw, and this was something like defensively, I think they noticed this really quick. And this was, you talk about a shift from the first half to the second half. Drake hit some decent passes in the first half.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that the defensive staff started to notice that quarterback pissed his pants in the face of pressure. And most of the second half was blitzes. And that's like, you see these stats from Dante Olsen and Jed Nagler and Buss and all these guys getting sacks and pressures and hits and fumbles and picks. And you look at the plays where the Grizzly defense, what we had that succession where there's a Grizzly touchdown, Reed Miller pick, another Grizzly touchdown, and then another pick like shortly after that. And then late, you know, I guess Nash's pick was against the backup. But still, it was just like they knew that in the face of pressure, this guy couldn't do much. And so they really turned up the heat on him, and it just shut their offense down.
What's interesting on that, you talk about pressure, is we did get a little bit more pressure with the D-line this time. Like Shaw had a sack. But most of our sacks and pressure are coming from our linebackers and our cornerbacks.
Yeah.
Like I think one thing Calhoun probably said when he went in the coach's office and said he wanted to switch to cornerback was, you got to let me run full steam at the QB a couple times every game, because they seem to be doing a QB blitz with him. Like, he has a QB hurry in the stat sheet this week.
I remember Trumaine Johnson used to do that QB blitz
mm-hmm.
from the outside a lot.
He had a safety in the Grizz Cat game.
Safety in the Grizz Cat game.
Yep. So we talked about Calhoun last week, and I'm still really high on Calhoun. I'm pretty high on Nash too. I've been two games in. I'm pretty happy with them.
How can you not be? You had three turnovers this week.
Nash probably, I mean, this is controversial, but Nash probably should have been our nominee for Big Sky Defensive Player of the Week. And he would have won it and the national one, except that Dante Olsen freaking had 16 tackles, 3.5 tackles for a loss, two sacks, a forced fumble, and a pass breakup.
This is great. Now's the time to recount the Bobby Houck line.
Oh, yeah. So in the press conference, Amy Justice Mazzulian asked Houck, you know, something along the lines of Dante Olsen had 16 tackles. What do you make of his performance or something like that? And he said, nobody has 16 tackles. His mom must have been keeping stats. And everybody laughed and they went on. So Amy just tweeted that out. And Dante Olsen's mom responded. And she said, I was keeping stats and they missed a couple tackles. Which is great. I mean, I just think that's great.
That's Bobby and his little catchphrases and stuff. I was telling you guys earlier, this is something that years ago, QB Club, he would joke about, and I can't remember which of the Daly brothers with Bozeman State it was, but if it was Brad or Bobby, but he always joked about it was their mom that kept the stats, and these guys would average 20 tackles.
But it actually was the mom keeping the stats.
Yeah, so I think it was.
On the defensive side, I mean, Olsen's through 2 weeks. I mean, he's on pace to set every record we have,
yes,
right?
Yeah, so we did the math. So Dante Olsen just needs to keep doing what he's doing. So he will finish the season with 160 tackles, 16 and a half sacks, 25 tackles for a loss, 5 interceptions, and 5 forced fumbles.
So lost in kind of the Dante Olsen breaking out, which if you've been following Brent on Twitter for a couple of years, you would know that Dante Olsen's one of the guys he said would break out, just behind good guys last year. But Josh Buss has actually had a pretty good start to the season. You know, if you look at his stats through two games, and you're like, yeah, he's still in the running for every one of those national awards he was nominated for. I mean, he had 2.5 tackles for a loss. He had a sack and a half. He forced a fumble, I think. Had a pass breakup.
QB here, hurry.
Yeah, I mean, he's having a good start to the year despite not playing every snap, which is great to see, right?
Absolutely. I mean, he's sharing snaps with Jace Lewis right now, and Lewis isn't having that half bad of a season.
Jace Lewis had a sack this week.
Yeah.
So this is all speculation, and none of us are medical professionals, but will Josh play healthy at all this year, or will he always have kind of a nagging injury?
I mean, it's hard to say. I would imagine, I mean, and one of the things is we don't actually know what was wrong with him. I mean, there's rumors out there and stuff like that, but we don't actually know. What's interesting is the type of injuries that are floating around that he had, they're really more of all or nothing. You're risking re-injuring yourself playing any snaps. So it's like, I get that, yeah, we only want to play half the snaps, but sooner or later, it's probably more of a conditioning thing. And I have to think that come conference time, we're going to see a lot more of him. But I don't know.
Well, and you could probably argue that a 75% to 80% Josh Buss is probably still one of the best linebackers in all the FCS. So, I mean, outside of risk of a catastrophic re-injury, you got to give him a go. He's a senior.
There's a notion out there that really great linebacking numbers, you know, are certainly indicative of talented linebackers, but it also speaks to strong interior linemen.
Mm-hmm.
I know that, like, Jesse Sims is like a Viking, like a modern-day Viking. Shaw is a huge, strong, experienced interior lineman.
Well, I'm glad you brought this up because the defensive line is having an awesome start to the year, but also kind of an enigma at the same time. Like, we're holding teams to phenomenally low rushing stats. Like, our opponents have worse rushing statistics than we do, even if you take Snead out. Which speaks to the D-line, and they're pretty damn good, but they're really not getting the pressure that you would like to see them get. And hopefully that's with some time.
It'd be interesting to see because the more and more you see this defense, the more you see a lot of similarities to San Diego State. And so it seems like Bobby was trying to bring something back that he liked and saw. An interesting statistical analysis would be to see San Diego State. Do their linebackers lead in sacks, or is their D-line? Because maybe it's just the design of the defense.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at these guys, Shaw, Sims, and Tillman. and RJ Nelson and Jed Nagler. I mean, maybe these guys, you're just clearing the lane for Bus, Olsen, and Lewis. And maybe that's, I mean, you know, sometimes that D-line work, it's not the most glamorous.
No, and in fairness, both Nagler and Shaw had sacks this week. So, I mean, that's two sacks from your D-line. You know, if you could consistently get that every week, in addition to getting a sack or two from a cornerback or a linebacker, then you're actually doing pretty well. It'll be interesting to see. On some of those, like, third or fourth and forever plays, though, it's like the QB just has time and time and time and waits for the guy to come out of the backfield. So it's like I would have to guess that they're happy with parts of that play and want some of it to improve.
Jed Nagler, another Bob Stitt wide receiver.
Yeah. Man, how about that? And now he's a DN.
So you've got – Nagler's not starting technically, right? So how many Bob Stitt wide receivers do you technically have starting on defense? Two, right? And – third rotating with Nagler.
Third rotating in. Yeah. I'm waiting for a Bob Stitt wide receiver to play O-line this year, and then we'll really have... I don't know who it's going to be, but... but, you know, I think it's worth talking about the O-line a little bit more. So, like I said, the last 20 minutes, something seemed to click. And I don't know if it's Cole Sand coming in and guys kind of having slightly different takes and positions. What's interesting is... we have quite a few freshmen that they brought in, and then our O-line's really young anyway. And it's like, I know that for offensive linemen, you'd love to redshirt them so that they can get a year in the weight room and you bulk them up. But, I mean, if we've got true freshmen who could start for us, I'm kind of at the point where get them into the rotation. Like, what you would gain by letting them redshirt for a year, I think could be offset by, if we can improve our O-line play, I think the team can make the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean... I would say anyone following this team realizes the current weak link, the biggest concerns, O-line. I mean, you talk about where all the concerns with this team, where are they at? Protection of Dalton Snead, running game, and O-line depth now, especially when you got the Cody Meyer injury, and then, of course, what's kind of been documented about a couple of guys coming out of fall camp, Thane Jackson and Brandon Scott taking time off from the team. I mean, you've just got a lot of inexperience. I mean, guys that were talented in high school, a lot of 2- and 3-star recruits, but guys that just need that on-field experience. And all, like, most of the concerns coming out of these first two games, it's all centered around the offensive line.
A couple other things, you know, if you want to talk about concerns. 8 penalties for 88 yards. It's not really a traditional Bobby Houck team. Not so much in the number of penalties, which, I mean, yeah, you'd like to cut them down, but in the types of penalties. I think if you really gave Bobby Houck true serum, he's a lot more okay with a late hit penalty than a holding penalty.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a fair statement.
Well, what makes you say that?
I don't know. Just a hunch. I think that there were a couple dubious ones. Like, Robbie Houck had a phantom PI on what should have been Reed Miller's first interception.
Yeah.
When I rewatched it, though, Robbie did kind of look back at the ref before the flag was thrown. So I kind of wonder if there wasn't something off screen that... maybe he did, but either way, it didn't seem related to the play at all, so that's kind of a bummer. And we had a couple other dumb penalties. Special teams, on one hand, people are really excited about them because it's like they're actually running some schemes and we're getting good return yards and you're seeing guys swarm the ball. But there's also been some sloppiness that I think's got to really make Houck mad.
Oh, yeah. You got some holding penalties beyond the ball and things like that. We had a couple of those this last week, and you know that's got to drive them crazy.
Not to mention that we faked a punt that we would have converted, but we had a holding, I think.
Yep.
They attempted a fake punt on us. They ran 47 yards for a touchdown that Houck said in the post game, like, yeah, we were expecting it. We had a check and someone missed it. So it's like, those are two pretty big miscues that you don't expect to see from him.
I think we're still in the mode of this is our non-conference schedule and we hope to clean a lot of this incidental penalty crap up. They're cleaning their execution up. The players are learning new schemes that they maybe never ran before. Like, I don't know if they ever ran a special team scheme. I know if you came from a small Montana high school, you probably never ran a scheme.
It's because there were only 6 of you.
Exactly. We have players like that.
Your scheme was just block that guy.
Yeah, but it had, strangely enough, was Bob Stitt's scheme too. So
I think this is what we have the non-conference for. I'm glad we're making these mistakes now and still managing to come out with wins.
Yep.
So we can clean it up for Big Sky Conference play.
That's one of the things that I think is a hallmark of a Houck coach team is you don't generally expect to see the team make the same types of mistakes all year. Like, they usually go in and correct them, learn from those. They'll make other ones, and they're a young team. Players of the game, Luke, who'd you think?
I would say probably Dante Olsen.
Okay. Dante Olsen and on offense?
On offense, Jerry Louis McGee.
Yeah. For me, it's actually Jerry Louis McGee. I think people want to give it to the QB. And don't get me wrong, I've been very happy with Snead's play. But Jerry Louis McGee, I mean, he kind of is for not having the run game, he's really going to have to step up, and he did this week, which was great to see. On defense, I'm going to give it to Nash and Olsen, just so that Nash gets a little shout-out. But Olsen, like, how great of a year is that? What about you, Mark?
Oh, so you guys didn't prep me on this. So,
on the spot.
Here. I will say Colton Kynes and Reggie Tillman.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, Reggie had one tackle, and Colton's right. No, you know, it's hard to argue with... So what I'll say is maybe honorable mention, like Reed Miller had a solid game. He had one pick nullified, and then he comes back and he gets another, and that was like, that broke the dam. Like, that was it for Drake. Game over. Offensively, we talked about it earlier, but like, I just love what I saw from McKim. Just like the focus on execution. Like, look what you're talking about with some of these things where some of these errors with penalties and these things. Like, this is a team I think that's adapting to what this staff wants from them, and some of them have years of what was previously taught, so it's not something that's going to correct itself overnight, you know. But give me that game from a Kem with a couple of, you know, stupid holding penalties from a couple guys on special teams here and there, because that focus on execution is just going to start spreading. And so I like, there seems to be more good than bad, but you definitely notice right now, especially in September.
Oh yeah,
some of these errors. But.
That game from McKim. I mean, I'm glad you highlighted that, because that really, I mean, I think that to get that on film for these coaches, but you can't focus on one of these wide receivers. If we can get that from McKim, that is huge.
I mean, that's four guys out there, and then you throw Bingham out there too. That's five, and then I mean, I don't know where he is on the catches right now, but Eastwood has to be second or third in total catches on the team as well too, just because. Seems like all we can do is throw checkdowns to the guy. So, I mean, you've got five or six guys that you need to watch for in this pass game. Which, you know, again, is funny because Bobby wanting his running game.
I know.
And all we do is pass.
Eastwood only caught three balls last week.
Really? It felt like...
Wouldn't you, I mean, I would have... If you had told me eight, I would have been like, yeah, that seems about right.
Three
balls.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the rest of the Big Sky Conference quickly and go through our picks. So, in a recap, we had Portland State... going to Oregon. I think I picked that correctly, Mike. I don't know if you got that one.
I picked Portland State, Oregon correctly. Oregon won. Move on. Luke's just feeling a little cocky this week.
Then we had Northern Colorado going to South Dakota.
We both picked South Dakota.
We had Western New Mexico University, which we had to Google, went to Idaho to play. We both picked Idaho.
We both picked Idaho.
Then we had Eastern Washington going to Northern Arizona. I had picked Northern Arizona. No, I had picked Eastern Washington.
You picked Eastern Washington, I picked NAU. I'm hoping that this was a dyslexic moment for me, and if I re-listen to it, it was I picked Eastern Washington and you picked NAU.
So I'm plus one for the week. Yep. Perfect so far.
Perfect.
Then we had Montana State going to South Dakota State.
Yeah, we both got that one right.
South Dakota State walloped Montana State. We'll come back to that one in a little bit. Then we had Southern Utah going to Oregon State University. Mike picked the conference upset.
I was giving Southern Utah some credit that maybe they didn't deserve. Brent can't believe that I picked Southern Utah to beat Oregon State. So... that's plus two for Luke over me. Sacramento State, San Diego State, we both got that one right.
Then we had Weber State going to Cal Poly. Weber State wins.
It was closer than we thought it would be, I would say.
A one touchdown game.
Yeah.
Yeah. We both got that one right. And then we had the University of San Diego going to UC Davis. And UC Davis cleaned house 54-21.
I mean, I know that San Diego's a non-scholarship team, like we just talked about earlier, Pioneer League. But they've beat Big Sky 2 years in a row in the playoffs. UC Davis throttled them. Like, we're going to talk about this a little bit in a couple segments, but we're going to kind of reassess the preview. I'm getting more and more nervous about UC Davis because their offense is phenomenal through two games.
Through 2 weeks of picks, Mike and I are dead even after I went perfect.
10-0.
I went 10-0 in my picks last week.
Yep, so we're both 18-5 on the season. I went 8-2.
And some people do it in style, like me, going perfect. And some people don't.
Lord. You know what? If you hadn't been so terrible the week before, we wouldn't be tied, Luke.
So I just kind of want to throw out there, just to any Bobcat fans listening, like, I just want to make sure you guys are okay.
Nate, I don't care if you're okay or not. Hot take, Nate. In fact, I don't really care about what you say at all.
I kind of think this is so interesting to watch the roller coaster that is the Bobcat Nation. Like, they, well, first of all, have you guys ever seen a fan base more in love with a coach that has done shit?
No, off the top of my head, no.
Well, I mean, you just had to tune in, like, the end of the game last week, right? You got nothing to hope for, and I turned on the game, and whoever the, not the play-by-play, but their typical color announcer was talking about how much they love the, they never quit, they never, like, they never gave up, and they played a great game throughout, but it doesn't show in the stat book. And it was like, didn't they have like 40 yards at the half?
Yeah, I mean, they were terrible. And the thing that's interesting to me is sooner or later he's going to put together. And I don't think anybody picked them to win that game to start.
No.
But it's just like how they lost. And we'll talk about Troy Andersen in a second. But Troy Andersen was out. As you heard from none other than Luke on this pod, he was injured. We knew before everybody else. We're still not media people.
Grizz fan podcast.
We didn't tweet it out to get first credit, but he didn't play. So they started their freshman, supposedly three-star QB recruit, Tucker Roving. And he did terrible in the first half. They let him throw some deep balls in the second half, and he connected on some. So he showed some promise. He got better as the game went on. But the thing that's weird to me, and Colter Nuanez on ESPN Radio pointed this out today, their quarterback depth chart is so crazy. And we talked about this in week one, but it's like Troy Andersen is an NFL linebacker playing quarterback. And they upset Western Illinois, and he threw for like 86 yards and ran for 150 or something like that. And of course, like, that overhyped the expectations, but somehow he broke his left hand or something like that. This week, he doesn't take any snaps at QB or any meaningful ones, right? But that didn't mean he didn't play. He freaking played linebacker.
He recorded a freaking sack.
So it's like, I just, like, if you think that this guy is your quarterback that's going to take you anywhere, if he can't play quarterback, he can't play, period. Like, if they really believed he was can't miss, right?
I just think it just, it shows how terrible of a coaching staff.
Yeah, I mean.
And but the Cat fans, they love this guy. And my buddy Z-Train describes Choate as an all-caps coach. You know, someone who just, like, yells euphemisms, like, all the time and talks loud. And he's kind of an internet troll. But he's really, I think, leading, like, a psychologically abusive relationship with the Cat fans. Right? Like,
I'm not going to put my name on that, but that's an interesting analogy.
No, it's like, he gets them so excited with his, like, rah-rah cheerleader stuff. And, you know, these, like, longtime disenfranchised Cat fans are like, oh, yeah, like, here's a leader. I'm going to follow this guy. I get really excited. And he, like, wins this first game. And he's the best person ever. But you know what about these psychological relationships? The abusive ones always bring you down. they're short on the promises.
What's interesting is I feel like they're so excited because for the first few, probably 4 years of the Ash era, like, they had these awesome teams, but they couldn't get over the hump.
Yeah.
And they were, like, great defense, but the offense was you know, they had, like, star quarterbacks. Like, I think McGee was the first part of that. But they never quite could put it together. So then they kind of shifted their offensive philosophy, and they went all Oregon, and their defense got terrible. And so Ash got fired. And I think that they thought, well, we've got the offense going, we're going to bring a defensive guy in. And it's like they almost took the pendulum back too far the other way, where it's like, I would say the Cats' defensive coaching staff is pretty damn good.
Well, yeah, they did go the other way. They've got Choate and Gregorak.
Yeah, who are, I mean, they got a, that's a good Big Sky defensive coaching staff. But their offense, like, I mean, people made fun of their hires at the time because there was a lot of NAIA guys hired. And they're still there, not doing well. But what's interesting to me about, like, my last observation on Cats is, so the third QB was their biggest recruit this offseason as a transfer. It was a guy that was recruited by Oregon. He was, I believe, the number one ranked dual threat QB coming out of high school. Kind of flamed out at Oregon. Couldn't beat out, of all people, who's the guy that transferred from Prukop. MSU? Prukop. Dakota Prukop. So he transferred to JUCO, and now he's at MSU. Somehow, he doesn't win the starting job or the second string job. He's the third string. But what's weird is, if Troy Anderson's your quarterback, you are a running team that can pass occasionally, right? My understanding of Tucker Rovig is he is a passing quarterback that can run a little bit. The third string guy from Oregon maybe can't throw very well, but can run. And it's like, that's what you've been doing the whole Choate era anyway. Like, why would they not start the guy that more resembles the starter, right?
I don't know.
It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, but they sure play hard.
They play hard. They don't give up, you know. They care. And that's about all the more we're going to talk about the Cats, because it's too much already.
Now, this is a long segment, too. Yeah. Is this the Cat fan
podcast? It's the Grizz fan podcast, shit on the Bobcats podcast. Welcome to the show.
Welcome to the show. Three more hours of this.
FTC segment of the week.
Oh, hey, there we go. There's a name.
Oh, cheers.
You should see Luke's eyes here. They lit up. We're going to...
Trademark.
We're going to be the Brent Wahlberg FTC segment of the week here.
Speaking of segments...
Oh, no.
Fast reactions, Mike.
Oh, boy.
So we're doing the segment again where I just say things and Mike has to react as quickly as possible.
That sounds fun.
It's trouble.
You ready, Mike?
I'm ready. As ready as I'm going to be.
Josh Buss.
Awesome.
Grizz secondary.
Awesome.
Crocs.
Terrible.
2018 Red Sox.
I fucking hate the Red Sox.
People leaving voicemail in 2018.
Well, it's debatable.
That's what you want to debate.
I'm in real estate. Sometimes people have more of a message than it's good in a text.
And thank you, Michael, for your fast reactions this week. I thought you'd have more to say about Crocs.
I don't have anything to say about Crocs, but we could talk about the fucking Red Sox if you want to. I mean, has there ever been a less inspiring roster do so well? I mean, I don't care if it's the Yankees or someone else, but I hope that someone pounds their face into oblivion in the playoffs.
Mike has more antipathy for the 2018 Red Sox than he does the Cats.
Ooh.
Well, that's a good question. As long as Troy Anderson is on the Cats, that might be true. Because he's our guy. I'm glad that I did not disappoint you in the fast reactions. I'm getting better at this.
You're so fast, Mike. That's so what people fast. Don't know about you is your reaction speed mentally.
One of many underrated traits. And with that, we're going to move on. This is the part of the pod where we jump into talking about this week. The Grizz obviously traveled to Western Illinois to play the Panthers. Is that right? Western Illinois Panthers?
Sounds like the Leathernecks.
Leathernecks. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the other directional Illinois is the Panthers. But anyway, check that down for Nate. We corrected it live. Can you do that? But one of the things that we want to talk about a little bit before we jump into that is just kind of where we think the season is two games in. Obviously, there were so many unknowns on this Grizz season with a new coaching staff and so many new players. Now that we've seen them live two times, maybe our thoughts change a little bit, as well as maybe some of the Big Sky changes a little bit too. So with that, you know, we're going to turn it back over to our guest to take the first stab here.
Right. Well, thank you. I would say, you know, what was interesting, I think a lot of people were really worried about the defense, especially as you heard more and more talk about Josh Buss's health and these types of things. It's been two games. Northern Iowa lost a lot of its skill coming into that, and then we played Drake, so it's tough to totally say. But this defense has by far exceeded expectations. I mean, I think a lot of people that were really following this team were really worried about the secondary. We forced four interceptions, scored a touchdown. I mean, I think, what have I got? Something they're averaging, I mean, they're allowing about a little over 200 pass yards per game. The safety group is too deep across the board. So all of a sudden, the defense, I mean, has impressed. I like what I've seen out of it. And it, but like, so I think what was interesting with so many changes on the defense and then departures of like Chris Favoroso, you didn't know what to expect. So far, so good. Yeah, you know, we talked about D-line pressure being an issue, but I like what I see out of the defense so far.
You know, I think what's interesting is obviously that as more film gets out there, teams are going to figure out how to pick apart some of our weaknesses, like Nash and Calhoun. They're going to figure things out. But I think that one thing's established is we're not going to be as terrible as we could have potentially been. Because going into this season, before, I mean, in the spring, Calhoun hadn't switched over to cornerback. Nash, this converted wide receiver who had never played cornerback before, to my knowledge, was going to be our number one. You know, when Calhoun switches over, he at least played it at a high level in high school. And that's made a big difference. That and the safety depth that the team put together has proven to be legit.
It's kind of a counterfactual or hypothetical that you don't want to get too far down these roads. But what the hell would have this team done were Stitt to be retained defensively?
I mean, they would have hoped to find a quarterback transfer, would be my guess.
If not two or three. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, and that's the thing. It's like, it's a young group of guys. I mean, if they wouldn't have got transfers, you would have had, they played Nash last year. Yep. So Nash came in halfway through the season. And
Cowan's probably.
So you would have had Cowan's, who's technically the first guy off the bench. Yeah. But then Egbo, and beyond that, it was, you know, Crow was kind of a safety at that point still. So tough to say.
Whew. Yeah. The safeties, what's interesting is, you know, they're rotating these four guys in and they're getting a lot of playing time. But one of the guys that you actually like from camp, McGinnis, I mean, he's still back there. Like, he can't even crack it yet.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a guy, but you watch him where you watch McGinnis make his money right now, special teams. I mean, I think both weeks he had tackle guys for a loss on punt returns.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the pile on kickoffs. He's kind of one of these guys, and this is another, we talk about these kind of Bobby Houck staples. You get the special team standouts that move up through the roster as they become upperclassmen. And McGinnis, I feel, is going to be that guy. We only have one senior, I think, in the whole safety group, so he's probably got a couple years in front of him still. But when that guy's time comes, I'm excited for him.
McGinnis had two tackles on special teams, which is great. But let's talk about that one senior, because Reed Miller was one that maybe we didn't know what to expect. You know, he was a walk-on at Arkansas, 4 years there, graduate senior transfer, coming to, you know, get a chance at playing time, and wasn't completely sure what to expect. But he's one of those guys that just by watching play, you can tell that he kind of just exudes confidence and leadership. Like, don't you kind of get that a little bit on defense?
Absolutely.
And he's proven to be a big pickup.
I think, isn't he like second or third in tackles and stats? And technically, he's a backup. I mean, they rotate everybody, yeah. But he hasn't started a game yet.
Yeah, it's interesting.
One of the crazy things when reflecting back on the last two games is I don't know that I've said the name Josh Sandry yet. And that guy's a stud. He might not be racking up the stat sheet, but I can't believe that we have this talented of a safety group.
Because it was such a weakness at the end of the season, like, yeah. Was one of the major concerns. He had two tackles and a pass breakup.
So, I mean, but, I mean, you know, look at it. Northern Iowa really didn't have much of a passing game. They put something together late, but we knew their bread and butter was running. Drake, more of a passing team, but as soon as we figured out that quarterback did not know what to do when he had pressure, there was not a lot of stuff going up the field. So, I think, actually, you look at the game ahead, and these next few games that we have, Western Illinois, and then especially once we start getting into conference play with Sac State and UC Davis on the horizon, I think we're going to see these safeties a lot more.
So, defense, I mean, a little bit different. Offense, I think we've kind of beat to death a little bit. I mean, Sneed's probably, I would say, a smidge better than I expected him to be, but he's about what, you know, I mean, he was a three-star recruit, recruited to UNLV. He's got wheels. They're coming in handy. O-line is, you know, it is what it is.
One thing that's kind of funny was everyone talked about Bobby's back. It's going to be fullbacks. It's going to be twin tight end, and we're going to smash him in the mouth. I don't think I've seen a single play with a fullback. Now, granted, I don't know, but they haven't shown a lot of confidence in the run game yet, Or maybe we're just saving it. So maybe I'm tipping hand to something. But it's kind of because every these last two games you come away and people are like, where's the fullback? Where's the fullback? We need the fullback. But
have you been talking to my dad?
Yeah. I was talking to everybody's dad.
So
back in 1962, the Green Bay Packers.
You should have seen their fullback. I think my biggest impression is how big of an influence great coaching has on the team. You think there's a finite amount of time that student athletes can spend preparing each week, that there's a huge burden on the coaches. They have to be effective and efficient in the way they teach and develop these players. And like we've said from day one of Bobby walking in the door is he's a great coach, and he brought with him 100 years or more of coaching experience. And I think that's kind of why we're sort of optimistic about the season, right? Like we're like they've so far outpunched what we thought their weight class would be.
I just from an offensive coaching staff standpoint, I don't think that you could find a combination of two more qualified guys than Brent Pease and Tim Rosenbaugh anywhere in the FCS. I mean, Rosie maybe alone, but Pease was the freaking offensive coordinator of Florida,
yeah.
Which I know, yeah, he got fired, but I mean, and here he is, he's the assistant head coach and wide receivers coach. So, I mean, he's the offensive staff is great. The defensive staff, nobody really knew what to expect of the Bayer hire so far. You know, it's kind of fun, so we'll see how it goes. What about the rest of the Big Sky? Anything changed or surprised you so far?
You know, Southern Utah surprised me just in the sense that they look like hot garbage. And now suddenly, now you look at the rest of their schedule, and it's like, if they're going to be as crappy as they were these first 2 weeks, I saw some of their fans were saying they might not win a game. They might win one or two. You go from winning the Big Sky to two or three wins. That's pretty rough.
Yeah, that would probably be my biggest dropper in the preseason rankings if I was doing them again. Idaho's another one that we should revisit just because I think you overranked him to begin with, Luke. But if you're not ready to sell, that's fine.
I am not ready to sell, Mike. I'll hold on to that Enron stock for just a month longer.
It's Bitcoin now.
It's Bitcoin. Is that the timely reference? No, I think I will end up eating some crow on Idaho. That's all I have to say. They haven't impressed so far. They haven't dominated like I assumed a drop down should.
This is a telling week for them. They go to Davis. I think they're in Davis, right? And so this Davis offense is, outside of Eastern Washington, is one of the best in the conference so far. Two games now.
Nobody can slow start on Davis or they're in trouble.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
So Davis is probably my most surprising, and not because we didn't think they were going to be good, but they're looking great. NAU and Eastern are exactly what we would have expected. Sac State in there, you know. From there, I think it's going to be kind of interesting to see where things fall. With that, let's focus a little bit more on our game, Western Illinois. I tried to convince Brent that we should drop everything and fly out to this, but no go. That's fine. It's fine.
I get a text in the middle of the day with a $600 plane ticket saying, cancel your Friday. Let's go.
$600?
That's not bad. I had to look up that airport.
It's Quad not City into airport. Macomb, Illinois, because there doesn't appear to be
there's no airport.
Commercial airlines flying into Macomb, Illinois. So we would need to fly into Peoria, Illinois, and drive an hour and a half. But it'd be fine. I bet you the tickets are cheaper today.
When else would you go?
Exactly. You know, I've heard it's beautiful country. But anyway, we know a little bit about them. Obviously, they played the Cats in week 1. They started the season ranked number 25 in the stats FCS poll. They were a playoff team last year. They lost to Weber by 2, I think. The Cats beat them. And I'll be honest, my takeaway at that game was they're not as impressive as I expected them to be, especially their quarterback. I think their quarterback is going to struggle with our secondary as long as we can get some pressure on him. That being said, they are probably looking at our game film and thinking, oh my God, if we can just get to the QB before he can throw the ball.
Yeah. Their defensive line has a first team All Missouri Valley Conference defensive tackle. So this is
so did Northern Iowa.
So did Northern Iowa. And technically, so did Drake of the Missouri Valley Conference, but Pioneer Conference. So this is going to be our O-line's third week in a row playing the conference, one of the conference's projected top D tackles. This guy is, I think he's 6'3", 315 pounds. He is another one of these kind of borderline NFL-type prospect guys. Their D-line is penned to be pretty good. I'll admit I watched just the second half of the game against the Cats. I wasn't overly impressed with their D-line, but it's been 2 weeks. And actually, they looked a little better, well, statistically, against Illinois. I didn't watch any of that game, though.
That's kind of my notion, is that they're going to be a little sharper. And if Snead is sort of a take-off-and-run guy, that's essentially what they saw again with Troy Andersen. Right? Yeah. This won't be the first time they had to play chase or pursuit. Yeah. And I bet they're going to be a little better at solving that riddle the second time around.
It's also their first home game of the season because they were at Montana State, then they were at Illinois. And they actually kind of gave a little bit of a game to Illinois at first. Illinois pulled away late, which is kind of what you would expect in that FBS type of matchup. So opening game, it is also a first-year head coach. Yep. So it could go one of two ways. It could play to our advantage, or it could be they're so emotional and hyped up that they feel like they've got to get this win or their season's over. So it'll be interesting to watch.
Brent, you mentioned a little bit about having a young team come into their second game riding high off a big win. And maybe you could project a little bit of a letdown. Perhaps we saw that. Is this a trap game for the Grizz in that we've won two, we kind of know MSU's dog shit, and this team lost to MSU? Do you think our kids could fall into a trap of being like, oh, we're gonna roll these folks? Or is Bobby too like impassioned of a coach to let our kids relax?
I have a thought, and then I'm going to hand it off to Brent because I think he's got a better take on this. But one of the big flaws under Coach Stitt was we were never up for road games.
Oh, yeah.
Ever. And one of the things that how you've noticed is kind of everything that he perceived as a weakness, they've really focused on. I know he's altered their travel schedule a little bit to make them be gone as short a time as possible. Mm-hmm. But Brent, what do you think about that? The road game bugs. And this really goes back to even Delaney a little bit.
I could see it. I could see this being a trap game. It was kind of funny. Coming away from that for the first half of that Drake game, I think, Mike, I probably texted you. I was like, we're going to get smoked if we play like this. Yep. And not that the defense is going to just let us down, but like the offense is going to have no yards and no points. The defense is going to run out of gas because they're going to be on the field all day. So I could totally see it. But, Mike, your point, that's a great point. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see because you look at the first game of the season. Bobby even talked about this in his post game. We go in at the halftime and he warns these guys, this game's going to tighten up. And he kind of alluded to it didn't sink in and it didn't work. And then we heard, you know, in between the two games, we really rode these guys. We made them feel like they, you know, it was almost a loss to Northern Iowa. And they came out flat again. And mm-hmm. So I think there's telltale signs of concern. But that, I mean, your point is an awesome point because we saw some of Bobby's better games were these on the road, improbable games where you're probably going to lose. You can think of the JMU playoff game or the Cal Poly opener in 2008 or some of those crazy games in Portland where Bobby came out there and they had a plan and they just put it to him. Now, that was some of his more experienced teams. Well, maybe not the 08 Poly game, but, you know, so it'll be interesting to see.
The interesting thing is, you know, I think if you talk to anybody, even the most Grizz-colored glasses fan, and you said, what's the record going to be 3 games in the season? And people said 2-1.
Yeah.
So in my mind, they're kind of playing with house money. I mean, I know that's not how the coaches and the team are going to look at it, but we're fans, and it's pod. So it's like, in my mind, what the hell do they have to lose? If they go 2-1 in Bobby's first season back in the kind of pre-conference games, they're right where everybody would expect them to be. They've got more pluses than minuses. They've done a lot of good things. They're still going to be ranked in the FCS poll, even if they lose. I think they're playing with house money. And I think that that could be a difference, that Western Illinois is playing for their season today. And I know that's crazy to say, but you're not going to make the playoffs going 0-3 in the preseason out of the Missouri Valley.
In the Missouri Valley too,
because you're not gonna go undefeated. I mean,
and you've already got two teams that are presumed locks at North Dakota and South Dakota State. Both those two schools. I mean, based upon the way they've looked early.
I think this game is super important, and we just can't hand wave it away as house money.
All right.
Because MSU beat these guys.
Okay.
If it comes down to a situation where we're a bubble team and MSU freaking blows and they go, they have like one conference win or some crap like that, and you know the people, the biased, stupid like pickers. Who are those people? The conference committee chairs.
Uh-huh.
They don't.
Who I think is like Ken Haslam this year.
Is it?
Oh, is it Ken?
Better. He's like the Big Sky.
I hope.
Oh, I love him. I love that guy.
Somebody needs to fight for the Big Sky beyond just UM.
But I could see them holding a loss to Western Illinois against us if this crappy Montana State team beat them.
I don't disagree with you, but I would still say that head to head, us and the Cats, you know, whoever wins that game would get some, you know, credence there, and we're going to win that game. But I also think that we have a signature win already, because Northern Iowa is going to be good.
Yeah, I think so. And I mean, a lot of times Bobby Houck has an early road loss. Some of his better teams have those.
Yep.
So I don't want to lose the game, because then
not at all.
You're going to hear those stupid Cat fans
all year
run their damn mouth.
Yep.
So that's the, I mean, just so, you know, so they just stay off Egris and stop bugging us on Twitter for a week. That'd be nice.
Anything else, takeaways for this week's game? Obviously, we'll pick it in a few minutes, but keys to a victory in your mind. We lost the time of possession last week.
We lost it.
Yeah.
I'm not picking that one in, but we won the turnover battle.
Hey, that's a good one.
Which is what I said. I would look for zero interceptions by Snead again. I think we have to take care of the ball. I'm not saying we need to win the turnover battle by some dynamic margin. Obviously, it helps, but I think if Snead plays well, the Grizz are going to win this game.
I think if Eastwood can get over 3 yards a carry, taking out whatever his longest run of the game is, I think we win the game.
I thought you were just saying 3 yards.
If Snead can get 3 yards.
Four. If he's got 4 yards, we win.
Okay.
Well, prior to that 37-yard run, the longest run was 4 yards. So
we'll never win the time of possession
if we can't do that.
The way we're running the ball now, right?
But you know, I've enjoyed, like, I will admit that I've enjoyed how not like throwing out the bathwater. It's like they ran some tempo, and I liked it. Like, yeah. I think their best 20 minutes were tempo.
Yeah.
So keys to the game, I think that Eastwood, you know, averaging better than 3 yards a carry is important. On defense, I think that we need Calhoun or Nash to have at least one pick, because I think we need to make sure that we can take that part out of their quarterback's game.
Dante Olsen, 13 and a half sacks.
Jeez.
Sacks.
Over 13 and a half tackles.
It's like, okay.
Over or under?
I'm going to go with under, just because statistically 3 weeks in a row would be really impressive.
That'd be wild. That'd be wild. Yeah, you have to think under, right? Yeah.
What are your keys to the game, Brent?
Keys to the game, well, I think, you know, you look at...
Obviously, preview your...
Preview.
Yeah.
No, but I think for the Grizz to win, you look at both Illinois and Bozeman State, both ran the ball well. Maybe this is the game where we can... I don't know what Cody Meyer's health status is. I would assume that you're probably going to be Cole Sane again starting a guard. And if that's going to work and we can start getting some ground game, because what I want to see is a little bit more ball control. I don't see the keys to the game as time of possession. But I'll just say, I mean, both these two games, things got a little tense for the Grizz, because just a flat-out inability to run the ball outside of Dalton Snead saying, holy shit, I need to run for my life. So it'd be just nice to see that type of... Just a little bit better success. And then, you know, additionally, offensively, so Rosenbaugh's got two games now of film of him, just a bunch of short passes.
Mm-hmm.
I would assume Western Illinois is going to try to attack that. So you got to protect Snead. I mean, we need the O-line to have basically mimic that fourth quarter and spread it across the full game.
I definitely think that we're going to see some trick plays. I think that them teeing off on the short pass, we got to find a way to at least take a shot downfield, whether it's something similar to Kern and throwing deep to Bingham or something like that. I bet we see a trick play to kind of make them open up the field a little bit. It's also interesting because Snead's such an athlete that he actually can be a threat in those trick plays, right? He can go out and catch the ball.
We need our own Philly special.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I think that we'll see that.
So let's move on now to the upcoming week and pick the games in the Big Sky Conference. First game, Cal Poly plays on a short week. They host Brown, and I believe that's like Brown, the Ivy League school.
Mm-hmm. Cal Poly must be a good enough academic institution to come. They haven't come to UM yet.
Cal Poly, home of Weird Al Yankovic.
Oh, good to know.
And Joe Dimitrovich.
All right. I'm going to assume you're picking Cal Poly.
I'm going to pick Cal Poly.
I'm going to pick Cal Poly as well. UC Davis at number 13, Stanford.
Mike, pick it. I know you want to.
Come on, Mike.
No, it's like we've been hyping up UC Davis, but Stanford's going to win, right? I mean, UC Davis already has an FBS win, so if they win against Stanford, they are shooting way up in the poll.
That'll lead ESPN.
Yeah.
So Stanford gets both of our picks. We have Wagner College is going to Bozeman to play the Cats.
Wagner beat Bowie State in the first week.
So Bowie State?
Bowie's not a state.
Yeah.
That's what I know.
It's right next to Boise.
Are you going with the Cats?
I'm going to go with the Cats.
I'm going with the Cats as well, but man, I hope they lose that game. Northern Arizona at Missouri State. Missouri State? What conference is Missouri State in?
They're in the Missouri Valley, aren't
Missouri
they?
Missouri Valley? Yeah. Okay.
Is Cookus playing?
It's tough, because Cookus went out with an arm injury.
Top Sours isn't too good.
I'm going to take Missouri State.
I'm going to take NAU.
Okay.
Then we have Sac State is going to Northern Colorado.
I'm going Sac State with that just because that would line up with my preseason predictions.
I'm going to take Sac State too.
Okay.
Eastern Washington goes to Pullman to take on Washington State. Isn't that tempting?
Yeah. Who are you going with?
Brent, you mentioned in our pre-pod talk.
Yeah.
Eastern Washington is how many yards per game?
630 yards per game average on offense.
So that's okay.
I mean, it's okay.
Holy.
It's double what Montana does almost.
I get a side ache thinking about running 645 yards.
Now, the first week they played a Division II school, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to, I just think you got to go chalk on this. But I'm going to pick Eastern in the points, but I'm going to pick Washington State to win.
Oh, man, that's a tease. I'm going to pick Washington State as well just because I feel like Leach has turned a corner where they don't lose to Big Sky teams anymore, but we could be wrong.
Southern Utah goes to the University of Arizona.
I'm going to go with Arizona. What about you?
AZ.
All right.
The College of Idaho goes to Portland State.
Aren't the College of Idaho like the Spuds or something like that? Is that literally their... anyway. Portland State, I think.
I'm going to take Portland State.
They didn't win a game last year, so this is, you know,
this is do or die time. Then we have Idaho State going to Cal. Pulled off a big win against BYU.
Yeah, Cal is going to win that game.
Cal's going to win.
South Dakota at Weber State.
Oh, man, I am going to take home at Weber State.
Home at Weber State.
I'm going to take Weber State.
So this is one that I meant to talk about in our kind of what we've seen in the Big Sky wrap up a little bit, and I didn't. Weber hasn't looked as together on offense as I maybe expected them to. And South Dakota looked really good. So I'm going to take South Dakota just so that we've got some variety in our picks. But if Weber wins, you know, then it just makes my preseason picks make more sense. Which brings us to Montana and Western Illinois.
I think that the Grizz are going to prevail here. I think they need to prevail. I think they're going to have a lot of confidence going into this game. They're going to have a lot of momentum. I'm picking the Grizzlies.
You know, I am going to pick the Grizzlies as well. I think something about them, it seems like what I saw of Western Illinois is they're a team that Bobby Houck will pick apart. Could be wrong, but that's just my gut feeling.
T. Team of Destiny?
I'm not going to say Team of Destiny. Brent, what are your thoughts on the Grizz game?
You know, it's
ready to pick it yet?
I'm leaning the opposite way. I'm thinking Western Illinois in a close one. And again, I Mike, you tease me about this when I favor seniors over sophomores for starting.
He
but,
does.
I really do. I've got a, yeah.
He's having a hard time with all these young guys starting on our team. He doesn't understand
it. I don't get it. Just start all the seniors. But I right now, my heart says Grizz, but what I've looked at so far, road game, a little bit more experienced returning group with Western Illinois. Young Grizz, I would not be surprised if it was a closer game where you maybe just had a few too many errors by some of these young Grizz guys, and in the end it costs you.
You know, it wouldn't be the worst thing that would happen to them. They lose and they would learn a lot from it. And like you said, like Bobby Howe teams traditionally would lose one early and learn a ton from it. If I was a betting man, I would generally go with Brent's picks over either Luke or I, because there's a lot more research into that. So just putting that out there. With that, Brent, thanks so much for joining us.
This was
fun. Dude, this is awesome. Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
Thanks for the beer, guys.
Absolutely. We'll definitely have Brent on again. It's funny, we used to talk last year about how we should do a podcast and a couple other buddies. And then Luke called out of the blue and had this idea to do this podcast, so I jumped on board. So I'm glad that Brent has forgiven me enough for not starting the podcast last year with him to come on. So we'll definitely get him on again. Again, what's your Twitter handle?
@B Wahlberg.
And he is a great follow year-round for Grizz-related stuff. And with that, Luke, I think we're almost out of here. Do you have anything left for us?
Just one more thing, Mike.
Oh, no.
We're rolling back the segment. We're going to run it back where you read some lyrics.
What do we got?
You did so good last time.
Clearly.
With
John Legend, right?
Frank Ocean.
I think I said John Legend in the tweet.
You did such a good job reading Frank Ocean that this week I thought we would have you read some timely Mac Miller. Rest in peace, Mac Miller. Take it away, Mike.
No matter where life takes me, find me with a smile. Pursuit to be happy, only laughing like a child. I never thought life would be this sweet. It got me cheesing from cheek to cheek. Best Day Ever by Mac Miller. All right. Tragic death this week, so good tribute to him on the end of the pod here. I like that. That about wraps it up for us. We'll see you next week, unless we know you, in which case we'll see you a little bit sooner than that.
Go Grizz!
Fight on!
Spring is gone, summer's here.